From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, April 22nd, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Red Zone Wireless, providing a local alternative for broadband throughout Maine. Learn more at redzonewireless.com.
Maine cities and towns could prohibit firearms at voting places and governmental meetings if a new bill clears the legislature. Supporters say the proposal is meant to give communities the option to ban firearms, which they say can intimidate some voters or escalate tensions during public meetings. Poland resident Stanley Tetman told the legislature's state and local government committee that the proposal would give local government workers and elected officials the same protections that exist at the Capitol complex.
This is not a gun rights issue. This bill does not prevent anybody from purchasing or possessing a firearm. This is about a local community being able to decide how best to protect its workers.
Opponents of gun control are coming out against the bill, which they say will create gun-free zones that perpetrators of violent crime could exploit. Both home sales and prices were down last month in Maine. The Maine Association of Realtors says sales of existing single-family homes dipped a little over 3% in March compared to the year before. The median sales price was down just under a percent to $210,000. For the nation as a whole, home sale numbers were down 4.7% in March, but the median price rose nearly 4% to $261,000. And parts of Maine could see some minor flooding today into tomorrow and possibly Wednesday for a few places. National Weather Service meteorologist Patrick Malloyt in Caribou says there's water over some roads in eastern Aroostook County with a few rivers above their banks. Flood warnings are in place for the Mattawamkeag above Mattawamkeag, the Big Black River near Big Black, and the St. John River near Fort Kent. Late last week, there were concerns part of Aroostook County could see some significant flooding, but Malloyt says other than some ice jam flooding, it's generally been minor.
Basically, we got a little less rain than we were expecting, and the snow melt wasn't quite as rapid as there had been some indications it could be.
To the south, there are warnings for minor flooding in effect for the Androscoggin River in Auburn, the Kennebec in Augusta, North Sydney, and Skowhegan. The Weather Service says some rain expected later this week could slow the drop in river levels. In weather tonight, we'll have occasional rain everywhere but the north, where we'll have mostly cloudy skies, lows in the low 30s to mid-40s north to south. Tomorrow's showers, but ending early everywhere but central and down east Maine. Otherwise, cloudy skies, windy at the coast with highs in the high 40s to the low 50s. And Wednesday, showers, but ending in the west by about noon with highs in the low 40s to low 60s north to south. Hundreds of people showed up at the State House today to weigh in on legislation that supporters say is crafted to curb gun violence in the state. The measure would set up a process under which a person deemed dangerous to themselves or to others could be ordered to temporarily surrender their weapons. But as Mal Leary reports, some critics testified that the bill fails to strike a balance between competing provisions in the Constitution.
The proposal sounds simple enough. It's his sponsor, Rebecca Millett, a Democratic state senator from South Portland. It has bipartisan support in the 15 states that have passed similar legislation.
They allow law enforcement and family members to petition a court to temporarily prohibit possession of a person's firearm and hold any existing firearms for safekeeping if there is probable cause to believe a person poses an immediate and present danger to themselves or someone else.
But some lawmakers say the measure could raise constitutional questions and point to potential conflicts. Representative Jeff Evangelos is an independent from Friendship and serves on the Judiciary Committee that is considering the bill.
What I perceive to be a collision between the Second Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, and the 14th Amendment. And specifically in the Sixth Amendment, that a person has the right to be confronted with witnesses against them.
The 14th Amendment to the Constitution protects the right to due process and the second to keep and bear arms. Franklin County Sheriff Scott Nichols is among those who take issue with the fact that a person's firearms could be taken away even temporarily after a judge has only heard from one side.
In essence, this LD requires a search warrant to be issued through the courts on the word of a petitioner, and then law enforcement has to remove the personal property of a respondent using a civil approach without an underlying crime, because that respondent may commit a crime sometime in the future.
And while many speakers address the difficult constitutional balancing act created by the bill, others gave emotional testimony about family members or friends lost to suicide. Dr. Tony Owens of Cape Elizabeth says he believes he prevented his father from taking his own life by taking away his handgun over his father's objection.
I wasn't able to do that for my brother-in-law, as he took his life with a single pistol shot 20 years ago, almost to this day, leaving my sister a widow and his two daughters without a dad.
But Dr. Arthur Dingley from Farmington says the proposed law will not address the real forces that contribute to gun violence in Maine.
This law is a distraction. It's a shiny object which diverts our attention from the true mission. And the true mission is to address the root causes of despair and violence.
Last year, Maine lawmakers passed a similar measure, which then Attorney General Janet Mills helped to draft. But it was vetoed by then-Governor Paula Page. Mills has not taken a position on this bill, which does include some significant changes. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Governor Mills did sign into law earlier this month a bill that makes it illegal in most cases to try to find out the salary history of a potential employee. It is not uncommon to ask for salary history, even at the earliest stages of a job application, but studies have shown that the practice hurts women, people of color, and people with disabilities, and it affects them more and more as they move through their careers, to the tune, in some cases, of hundreds of thousands of dollars. When the law takes effect, Maine will be the eighth state to prohibit the practice. I spoke with Vasu Reddy, Senior Policy Counsel for Workplace Programs with the National Partnership for Women and Families, about salary history inquiries and why they matter.
It's very important for wage parity to stop the practice of using salary history to determine one's salary, because ultimately, when someone is discriminated against in a previous job, that means that the discrimination they faced in that last job will follow them from one job to the next. And so it really has a lifetime effect on women's wages. It also is important because often employers can use salary history as a shortcut for determining pay on the basis of previous salary history, as opposed to determining it on the basis of skills, training, experience. And so it really is, I think, a step towards really making sure that women's work is fully valued.
What do we know about how salary history information does impact what people are earning in Maine?
It's hard to determine the exact impact on the pay gap, but we do know many cases of women who have brought suit in the courts for being discriminated against based on their salary history. And this is in the number of $15,000 of a difference, or $8,000 of a difference. And, you know, that really adds up.
How does the Maine legislation specifically deal with the salary history issue? And is that a good way of dealing with it?
The Maine legislation prohibits employers from using or inquiring about the compensation history of a prospective employee until an offer of employment has been made that includes setting the compensation level. And so what this does is forces employers to actually look at the skills, training, and experience and the level of value in the job, as opposed to taking the shortcut of looking at their previous salary history. And so that means that people who have been discriminated against in previous jobs won't have that discrimination carry over to their next job.
This legislation does allow employers to collect salary information after someone's been made a salary offer. Does that matter?
I don't think that is a major issue. I don't think it's a problem that they can still collect salary history after the offer has been made, because once the offer has been made, the compensation package is set, and the extra information is just there for employers to, you know, for their own data or for whatever collection they need. So I don't think that's a particularly harmful provision.
In what you have discovered in your research on this, and specifically about Maine, from what you know about Maine, what else do we need to know and be thinking about when it comes to salary history and when it comes to legislation about it?
I think it's just a great step towards greater salary transparency and making sure that salaries are set based on merit rather than old habit. It's a great start to closing the wage gap in Maine and can only benefit the state to enact this protection and other protections.
All right, Vasu Reddy with the National Partnership for Women and Families, thanks for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me.
And you can find more information about the wage gap in Maine and around the country at mainepublic.org. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation with First District Congresswoman Shelley Pingree. I'm Nora Flaherty.